Okay, this is the September 13th member prospect call, and we have Ryan McClung and Chip Simon as our member hosts. And actually, rather than read your bios, I thought I'd just hand it right on over to one of you guys, and you can introduce yourselves and let our callers know a little bit about each of you, and then we'll open it up for Q&A.
Okay, well, Kim, I wonder if the callers don't mind. I'm wondering if folks could just say their first name, where they live in the country, and whether or not they've got previous, you know, financial planning experience, or whether they're kind of starting out, you know, starting from the get-go.
Great idea.
Would that be possible? Because that helps me orient to maybe needs of some of the listeners as well.
Yeah, great idea.
So this is Greg Pierce. I can start if you'd like.
Okay. I'm sorry, that was Ray.
It's Greg, G-R-E-G, Greg, yep. Right. And I live in St. Louis, mm-hmm. and I do not have any previous financial planning experience. I am coming from the commercial insurance industry side,
mm-hmm.
so I worked in the property and casualty markets.
Great.
But I'm very interested in starting my own financial planning firm. So.
Great. Real helpful. Thanks, Greg.
This is Eric Klump. I live in Rochester Hills, Michigan, and I've got about 8 years' experience in financial planning.
Great, okay.
All fee-based.
Okay.
All
right,
next. Scott Brunig. I live in Seattle. Yes, I do have experience.
Great, okay. Is that it, three?
Do you want to go forward? Do you want to be the first one to introduce
Sure.
yourself?
Is that okay, Ryan? Or
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Oh, maybe we have one other just joined us?
Yeah, I think so.
Hi, this is Mary Carol Rose in Baltimore, Maryland.
Mary Carol, how are you? This is Kim.
Hi, Kim. I'm fine. How are you?
Good. It's good to hear your voice. We were just introducing ourselves. Do you want to let Chip and Ryan, our hosts, today, and they are asking for your quick background on where you live and if you have any financial experience.
Okay. I live in Baltimore, Maryland presently, and I have 25 years' experience as a certified financial planning and coach and a couple of corporate positions where I was developing delivery systems for financial planning advice. Different kinds of format. That's
okay. Great. And I'm sorry, your first name again?
Mary Carol, both words.
Mary Carol?
Right. Uh-huh.
Great. Got it. Okay. Well, thanks, everyone. So I will go first. So my name's Chip Simon. I'm located over in Poughkeepsie, New York. So East Coast, halfway between New York City and the state capital of Albany, halfway up the Hudson River. So we've been a little damp around here recently, as some others have, like in Baltimore, I imagine. Let me see. I've been with ACA. This is my ninth year of practice, and I started from scratch, by the way. And I'm now I am now 59. I will be 59. No, I am 59. All right. You start, you know, getting in denial about this when you reach my age. So I started my practice at the age of 50. And I did have something of a financial background in that I have a master's in accounting. I had some public accounting experience in my background. So I was fairly adept with the debits and credits, which I actually think is a great fit for the for the ACA model if you do have accounting or number sorts of backgrounds. I do have to disclose to you that I've been on the board of the organization. I've been the chair of the board of the organization, and I absolutely adore the organization, so I am very biased. But I hope that some of the enthusiasm will at least translate to you folks today. But so I'm all for ACA. Let's see. And one of the proofs of the pudding is that that it's worked out for me is that my wife is announcing her retirement at the end of this year. So there's a reason for that, and it's because of the fact that I could actually develop a thriving practice in my market. I think it's important to kind of recognize the market that you were in as far as how you position yourself if you're going to be starting off in a new practice. And I consider my market to be suburban/rural, both in terms of the population and the mindset. There is only one other NAPFA advisor in my neck of the woods. It might be much more competitive for you folks where you are if there's more population compression, and that's a thing you have to think about when you are when you're starting your practice. Ultimately, I think the biggest question I tend to be looked at by members of the organization as having good marketing skills. And one of the things that you really have to think about when you're getting your practice going is, what's the reason why people are going to come buy what I have? Why would they come to me? And if you've never worked within the realm of personal services before, we were counseled many years ago that ultimately hardly anyone wants what we have, and even far less people are willing to give you money for it. So getting out of the box and really knowing who you need to be approaching as potential clients, making yourself recognizable, having a value proposition, it's real important when you're getting going, especially if you're starting from no previous experience like Reg Express there in St. Louis. And those are things that ACA specifically has a lot of help and guidance with as far as providing the coaching, providing the support that you need to get the initial business plan and get yourself out of the box, literally, I think a box arrives, right, Kim, with materials, to get yourself out of that box and get up to speed as quickly as possible. So I found my way to ACA, by the way. As with many people, I had heard of Garrett Planners first. But then when I talked to, I ended up getting referred to ACA by folks at NAPFA. I spoke to our executive director and listened to a tape. And when I heard one tape by our founder, Burt Whitehead, about the value proposition for our services, I said, that's it. That's the one that I want. And fee only is very new to my area, but I think that there's been a good amount of acceptance within the professional community around here. So it's worked out well for me. And in my practice, I'll have you know that half of my business comes from the internet, and half of the new business comes in from local professionals that refer to me, attorneys and CPAs primarily. That's a little starter. Is that enough, Kim, to get going?
That's great.
Okay. Is it my turn?
Ryan, you
I'm out here in Portland, Oregon, and I'm a CPA, PFS, and CFP. And let's see, way back in the dark ages, I was at a big accounting firm, and then I went and became a CFO for a private company, and then started my own accounting practice on the side. So I've had my own accounting practice for about 12 years. And then just over a number of years, I had kind of played with the idea of getting into financial planning as part of my accounting practice. Ran the numbers many times, read a number of books, came upon fee only as making sense. I thought it really made sense with what I was doing as a CPA, not selling anything. It works really well with being a CPA because you're on the client side. They see that. It's easy to explain how you are unbiased in that sense. And, so then that led me over a couple of years to do some research, went to NAPFA, the NAPFA National Conference a number of years ago. That's how I came upon ACA. It was at a NAPFA conference, actually listening to Burt Whitehead. And, before that I had played with the numbers with the hourly stuff. Everybody's heard of Garrett, and I just could never. It seemed like you had to continually be marketing yourself, and that a large number of your clients would have to be new each year. So you, and I just didn't like that proposition. And what I like about the ACA model is, among other things, is that you're trying to find a limited number of clients that are going to be long-term, year-after-year clients. That's the retainer-based model, where you just don't have to sell all the time. You don't have to continually be finding 100 new clients that you're going to charge $2,000, $3,000 to each year to make any money. So that made a lot of sense to me. And then, you know, once you get into it, you find that, I don't know if you guys have your own practices or you're part of bigger firms, but setting up your own practice is really a daunting task. There's a lot of things involved in it, from what kind of tools you're going to use, how do you get, you know, there's 1,000 vendors out there for every kind of software, every tool that you might need. There's all kinds of things you don't need, but there are people trying to sell it to you. What kind of forms do you use? How do you set up your ADV? What does it say? All that kind of stuff. It's just a daunting task that that I was able to do by using a lot of the templates to start with from ACA. And it costs a bunch of money up front to go through the training and get all this stuff, but I think I say to this day that I got started 2 years faster than I probably would have otherwise, and so it paid for itself right off the bat, because you just don't have to sit down and figure it all out for yourself. And you can tweak stuff and change things as you go along, and something that fits for you. So I've been an ACA member for 4 years now, and I think it's great. It's fantastic. And it works well. I still have my accounting practice. I have a partner. I have a separate accounting practice with a partner, and then I have my practice, my financial planning practice, and they're both out of the same office. A lot of my clients are coming from our practice, but a lot of them come from the internet too, and from word of mouth, other CPAs and whatnot. So, I like Chip. I'm a big fan.
This is Greg. Can I go ahead and ask a question?
Sure.
I was just going to say that.
Okay.
Please do.
Just while we're on the topic of the various technology programs and systems that are out there, it's my understanding that what ACA has is all Excel-based, and I'm not sure that that's correct or not, so you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm wondering about all of the various platforms that are out there, the various software tools that are out there. Does ACA stay up to date with all this, the new items that come out, or is what we're given to start with, is that enough to, you know, to pretty much achieve the beginnings of a business? Can you comment on that?
Yeah, sure. As far as the financial planning tools, because I'm actually, we call them tools that we have available, and I'm actually running a session at our annual conference this year about how people might adapt or tweak the tools. I still actually use tools that were about 7 years old. Let me go back. The most precious things that you can do in developing and creating your practice are, number one, not waste time, and number two, not get distracted. And what we do with clients, our model is not geared toward putting our arms around client assets. Our model is geared toward putting our arms around client problems. And in essence, what we are really positioning ourselves as, what we really offer our clients, is education. What clients really appreciate is keeping things simple, because the clients that will value the services the most are either, say, really busy or really ignorant about things. They want to be built up in esteem. They don't want people that are there banging their chests and saying to them, look how smart I am, and telling you all these concepts that you can't possibly understand. Okay, so it's real important to learn how to talk to people about their money from their point of view. And I'm speaking from my clients, who tend to be pre-retirement, older. I mean, maybe it is different with younger people in technology, and I completely accept that. I really try to stay away from other things, software-based applications, the new financial planning stuff that's out there that's being sold, some of which is geared toward, you know, products or more investment management. I keep myself really focused simply on educating clients and making them feel comfortable and reducing their anxiety and making them feel in charge. So I think that the simpler the better, and I still basically use those sort of tools. Now, part of the bias that I'm speaking from, Greg, is that I've got, you know, when I did my NAPFA plan, I got, you know, I got a software. So I use Navaplan, for example, things like that. I mean, I just it was untold wasted hours doing that stuff, and I didn't use it because I realized it was used to sell certain information. Far too complex for my needs for a NAPFA plan or working with clients. Now, understand that in my practice, it'll basically be about me. So I'm not building a practice to scale and to have a lot. You know, when I reach my maximum capacity, I'm closing. Other people have bigger appetites. And they will need more technology platforms for sharing information between the planners in the office if you're going to have a multi-planner office or something like that. But I think to get going and for, you know, for a long time, unless you really feel the need to be a techie person, the simple tools that you are provided with will carry you a long way. And there are still planners in the organization who have, I mean, the old guard, which is up to maybe about near 20 years of experience, that still use the simple tools and have their whole life. And many people get away from them, they go to newer technologies, and they come back to the simple tools because of the simplicity and because of the client appreciation of that simplicity.
Great. I think you'll find in the organization that there's all different size of practices, and and the model of the ACA model is designed to be so that you can modify it so that, you know, if you need to change something to fit multiple planners in your practice, you want to have employees, or you just want to do it all yourself, and you know, so it's scalable. But the recommendation is generally to start out just using the ACA tools, and then as time goes by, see if there's really anything else you need. And that's the way it's designed. That's the way the course is taught when you go to the training. And it's been true. I've added a few little pieces of software over the years, but I've wasted some money, too. I wasted a lot of money over the years thinking you need to buy MoneyGuide Pro, and then you just don't use it because the ACA tools answer most situations very simply, and you just waste a bunch of time with it.
Great. Thank you.
Sure.
Anybody else, please ask away if you have any questions.
This is Scott. Let me give you a scenario, and I'll play the client. And I'm just curious as to how you guys handle this. I meet you, and I have X number of dollars, and I see these dollars as my only need. I don't know it, but what I'm telling you is I want money management. I don't want planning. I might need it, I don't want it, or I don't think I want it. I have enough money there, and I can pay your fee, no problem. All I want is money management. What do you do?
First, I send them to a money manager, or I tell them that that's not what I offer.
Fair enough.
I do not measure investment performance for my clients. I'm not equipped to do that. I mean, I don't have, you know, a couple thousand dollars worth of software that basically provides them with historical information. And I figure what good is that anyway? They can go to a custodian, sort of see how things have done. You know, my job is to help them improve their net worth by the behavior. And it's the behavior of the client sitting across the desk from me that makes the most difference in their lives, and that's where we're coming from. I work on things that I can control. I do not work on things that I can't control, like investment performance. And my clients, I make that very clear to my clients. I also don't position myself as an investment manager. I create an investment and an implementation plan that is theirs, and I help them stick to it. Because there are, like diets, I tell them there are 1,000 investment plans out there. The problem is not coming up with a suitable investment plan or an appropriate investment plan. The problem is sticking to the plan, which is the value that I'm adding.
Yeah, I do the same thing. That's exactly what I do. There are, I think what differentiates us from, you know, a lot of other people out there is, and I see it all the time, even at the NAPFA meetings, is there's people that are very focused on just the investments. And as an ACA member, we believe that that's only one piece of the bigger picture, and we really emphasize tax savings and making smart decisions all around your financial life and not just sitting down and talking about investments once a quarter and sending them on their way.
Yeah, that's a good point, Ryan, because for us, doing the comprehensive plan is not about the chance, again, to get our arms around the assets for management for the 1% or whatever it is. It's about keeping our arms around the plan. We have a high contact model, a lot of meetings with clients, and certainly not all those about investments. And we take a modular approach. We break up the planning elephant into a number of bite-sized pieces. The first year we tend to meet with clients as many as 8 times, going through the different pieces of the plan. So it's a very high contact, high interactive model, and we're planning. We don't work in the back room working on jiggling software. We're doing things right in front with the client while we're talking to them to help them come up with answers. So. And by the way, I do tell clients that they should always understand the background that their planners have, because if you have an investment background, then I think it would be very natural for you to have an investment, feel that that's where your strength is. I mentioned my background is in accounting, as I just found out is Ryan's as well. So I care a lot about cash flows in working with the clients and taxes, because to my mind, all that investment stuff doesn't mean anything unless it comes down to cash you need at some point. It's all about cash flow ultimately. So that's the way that I position myself in my practice. But there are ACA people that position more of their investment background because that's who they are. So I'm not saying if that's your background, don't not be that. I think that your practice will be reflective of who you are and what your strengths are, because ultimately that's part of what you're selling to the clients as well.
Yeah, there are definitely investment gurus in the ACA club. It's just part of the theory is that there's other decisions other than just what you do with your money itself that affect your long-term prosperity and whatnot.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, that helped. Okay, good.
Mary Carol, did I hear you? Did you have a question?
You did.
Okay.
You did. I have a question. I'm not sure which one of you was speaking. One of you said that when you reach your goal, you're maxed out, and part of it was the answer to the technology question. You didn't feel that there was a need for big scalable systems. Could I ask you what your plan is, what your goal is, and what you're driving towards? That's one question. Second question is, and I have looked at them a lot, and I flip-flop notes on the tools and the simplicity of the tools, and it's more of a behavioral approach, and I'm 100% behind that, because I certainly have found that to be true over the years. Is it challenging, however, in today's environment to position yourself that way? And I know one of you has been there 9 years, I think, and the other one's been there 4. I'd like to hear your opinions on that. So two questions.
So Mary Carol, and when you what about today's environment? What are you speaking of in today's environment?
I'm just speaking about kind of people not really knowing what to do and where to go and to turn for advice. There's a lot of I'm experiencing a lot of disillusionment with just the overall financial system and how it works. It actually boosts up a behavioral approach, but I'm wondering how you find that approach. In other words, people are scared. I think they want some assurance that what they put in investments will amount to something. So when you're not looking at the investments, I mean, how do you deal with that? And do you just let them go to investment people and then they check back with you and you're just letting the investment people drive that piece?
Oh, no, let's clarify that. So I'll go first on this, Ryan. And by the way, my sort of intermediate goal for clients is having 40 retained clients, but I would be at absolute capacity for me would be 50 retained clients.
Okay.
Are you a solo practitioner then?
I am.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I've got a part-time assistant. But about today's environment, I think first of all, so if everyone subscribes to the concept fee only, understand again that the consumers will not get that right because they'll still call it fee-based. And we have all learned that we are out there presenting our practices to new prospective clients. I don't even use the term fee only because they won't understand it. What I say is I do financial planning without product sales, which the right client for me will understand, because they're either just very nervous about working with someone who sells something, or they've been somewhat bruised in the back in the past, and then they know they don't want to work with someone who sells something. So that kind of environment is why people find their way to my doorstep, at least in my market, or why they get referred to me. I mean, if you look at Kiplinger's retirement report this month, you'll see one of my clients is featured in there because she just couldn't move forward after having lost her husband, and so she got referred to me by her attorney to just help her get organized. A lot of people are just really stuck about handling, you know, financial matters, and our job is kind of to shepherd them through things like, you know, form phobia and filling out forms and things like that. Mary Carol, the thing to clarify is I clearly handle investing for clients, as all ACA planners do, but that doesn't mean that I have to position myself as an investment manager. So we all have most ACA planners have institutional relationships and custody client assets at a Schwab or an SSG or places like that. I actually do not. I keep all my client assets, which now total about investment assets, about $48 million, in retail accounts. So I work my clients, and my clients like it because they have control over the accounts. And I'm actually a lot of risk because my clients can just leave my practice. They don't have to sort of get their assets back from me. They can just, you know, not renew with me and leave the practice. And they have that choice. So I tell them, you know, I want clients who are here who want to be here. And they tend to be very loyal, and it stuck with me through the years. I just lost my first client because, unfortunately, she passed away from a second bout of breast cancer after 9 years. So that's why I lose clients, because of natural attrition right now, unfortunately. I'm starting to see that now. But I want to dispel the notion that we do not do investing. It's a question of positioning ourselves as investment managers. And there's a difference in that.
Yeah, but to answer your other question, I think you actually had two questions there, Mary Carol. In this environment, I think there's lots of opportunity because people are just really scared. They're uncertain from day to day. The market's going up and down, and you know, like Chip, you know, I don't promise returns. I think Burt Whitehead actually said it best. We're going to try to follow the market. He said, what I can promise you is that we will try to get market returns, but he doesn't promise any kind of, you know, fancy investment, you know, theories and all this kind of stuff. What we're going to do is make smart decisions with all the little pieces of your life that maybe you don't even understand are important. And we're going to, you know, we're going to get your tax situation. We're going to do some tax planning. We're going to take a look at your insurance and make sure that you're not, you know, missing something, that you don't have some risks there that you're not aware of. We're going to get everything in order. And a lot of times people, I find, and it's like Chip said also, you're looking for a specific kind of client. You're not just trying to get every person that comes in the door. You're looking for a specific kind of client that, and the kind that I generally see are people that are just really overwhelmed with all the little things, and they don't even understand what all the things are that they need. They just know that they don't know what they are, and they're confused, and they don't even know where to start. And, you know, as far as investment strategy, I keep it real simple. You know, I'm indexing, I'm focusing on asset allocation. We have suggested funds. There's a group at ACA that focuses on using some ACA methodology and comes up with a group of suggested funds in a bunch of different categories, and I use those. So we do keep an eye on the investments. It is important, but I'm not promising anything. I want them to understand what the strategy is and what the risks are and what the possibilities are. And I'm very straightforward. You know, we start getting into deciding on investments and an allocation, and I, you know, right off the bat, I'm telling them, okay, you know, there's always a possibility that the market could take a dip next year of 10 or 10%. So you're putting that in their mind, and you're taking away the worry about that because you have a plan, you know, and then you're meeting with them on a regular basis to check in and remind them, because they're always hearing from other people about these great tidbits that they got from somebody else or this piece of information that conflicts with what you're telling them. And so you're constantly, you know, reinforcing our theory. Mm-hmm. And it puts their mind at rest. And that's what, you know, that's what we're selling. You know, we're not, like you said, if somebody, you get people to come in and they go, okay, what kind of rate of return can you promise me? You know, this is what I want to put my money in. There's this great idea. Somebody's got a limited partnership in, you know, this, some kind of oil wells or whatever, and I want to put half my net worth in there because I know it's going to, they're saying it's going to make 20% a year. You're like, well, you know, you can do that, but that's not, you know, that doesn't make sense to me. And here's why. And, you know, and if somebody wants a gunslinger, some kind of broker that's, you know, always getting into IPOs and doing all kinds of stuff, that's not us. It's not me. And I just tell them that. So.
One other question just came to me while you all were talking is, could you comment on average? I know it's kind of a tough question, but on average, how much time do you spend with a client the first year and the second year? And I think the fee structure, it steps down the second year. And what's your average fee?
The average fee throughout Cambridge is about, I think for a first-year client, when we did a study a few years ago, it was about $6,000.
Mm-hmm.
And average renewal was about half of that.
Okay.
But I think people have tend to try to up the renewal year some. And it also depends on whether you're trying to get your practice up to be what a wealth management practice is, whether you start having minimums and stuff like that. We're all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, different markets are, you know, obviously different. California is a lot. People are used to paying a lot more than they are in my neck of the woods.
But not in Poughkeepsie, I'll tell you.
What's that? Oh, yeah.
But not in Poughkeepsie.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a dogfight.
I don't know what my average would be. That's a good question. It's probably somewhere in the fours.
Okay.
And then I don't generally, it varies a little bit by client, but I don't generally drop it mm-hmm. from year to year after the first year.
Okay.
I just suck it up and say and know that I'm going to put in a little more work the first year.
Thank you.
This is Greg again. As someone different from the rest of the group on this conference call, someone that's new into this industry, I would be looking for probably more than the average in terms of support and maybe a mentor type of relationship with someone or multiple people. How does that work within ACA? Is there someone that, you know, that gets assigned to me? Is it based on my own networking within the organization? Do I choose my own? How much assistance is available for someone that's just starting out?
Well, there is the mentoring program. I actually don't know the state of it today. I mean, if anything, it's better than when I started. So is that, Kim, can you speak to that?
I can, yeah. We actually have somebody on staff that's like the concierge, if you will, for your first 2 years, and she sets you up with a mentor. If you knew somebody that you wanted them to be your mentor and they would actually agree, then I'm sure ACA would be open to that. But first, your first 2 years, you have somebody on staff helping you along the way, more like as a coach, and then, of course, we do have that mentorship program.
Okay,
and Greg,
great.
When you get to the conference, you'll be buddied up with somebody during the conference.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yes, and then you'll meet Arlene, and you'll meet the staff, you'll meet the board, you'll meet everybody. And so many of your questions will be answered at the conference.
Okay, great.
Yeah, and another thing, Greg, that was really important that I did, and even I guess we call it season planners, we'll do it, is a number of planners act as hosts to visitors. And so you can go and actually sit in on appointments, after permission from clients is obtained. That's incredibly valuable.
Okay.
to just see how it's done. I mean, I called Bert a couple of years ago. I went out to be with Bert in Michigan for a day just because I wanted to sort of see what was going on. You know, see how he was conducting meetings and things like that. And that was absolutely fun. So.
Right. Great.
Yeah, people are real open to that, and that's a real. When you come out of that, you start going, oh, God, yeah, I really can do this. Because you're wondering that. Believe me, you're going to wonder that. Oh, my gosh, you know,
right.
Here I am. I'm supposed to be this instant professional expert in my community. And you start, you know, might start quaking in your shoes. It's a real confidence builder to see that and sort of bear witness to what goes on.
Great. Thank you. That sounds great.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, this is Scott again.
Yep.
I'd like to ask, what do you do, and I think I'm beginning to get the answer in my own mind here, but what do you do if you advise the client to do X and either A, they don't, or B, they say they don't want to, and in your opinion it, you know, materially affects what not only what you think they should do, but what they think they should do? And let me give you an example from this is a very broad, experienced thing I think everybody would be able to identify with that's done planning before. Let's say it's an insurance issue, and you've identified, and maybe not just life insurance, but disability or health or whatever. And, you know, frequently people don't like insurance, you know, conceptually, and they don't want to buy it. They don't want to obtain it. What do you do?
Ryan, do you want to answer?
Yeah, you can't force somebody to do something that they're refusing to do. You can give them the advice that you think is appropriate, and I guess in that situation, I haven't had anybody specifically doing that. But I guess I would, from coming from an accounting background, I would document it for the file and make sure that. It was clear what you thought they should do, and that they were told that, and not sure what else you could do really. You could, if it was something that they decided to do, I can't really think of anything on. Well, I guess they could buy some annuities or something, but if it was something that you thought was just a ridiculous decision and it affected the overall relationship to the point where you didn't think you could work with them, I would, tell them that. I haven't come across a situation. I mean, there's people that do things. The biggest problem I have is people, we put together some kind of savings plan, and then they go and blow it on a car, instead of putting it in a savings like they're supposed to be, things like that. But that's, their decision, ultimately. You're just giving them advice.
Yeah, I guess the concept is, giving disinterested advice. I actually remember thinking back how Bert used to talk about, impartial advice. He gives the advice. Whether they do it or not is really up to them. So I think it makes sense to document things, as Ryan says. But, I always mention to someone the benefits of having a mortgage, but for the most part, my clients are their retirees. They don't want a mortgage. They have plenty of money. So I say, fine. I'm just presenting you with this option. If you don't want to do it, that's absolutely fine. So.
Okay, that's good enough.
In general, I find that this is probably the case with most ACA clients because of our, there is a. We're selling that good night's sleep. They tend to be, I find, nervous people. I mean, they really look to us for decisions. So we have an important place in their lives that I respect completely. And if we make a recommendation for those sorts of things, I mean, they'll think about it. They'll consider it pretty seriously. It can have a very frank discussion. These relationships are really close. So it's And maybe that comes because they know we don't have any other stake in things. They know there's not going to be a trail or a commission what we're recommending. We send them out to someone else that makes the commission on it, for an insurance policy or something like that. So anyway, that's my experience. It's not a struggle, and there's appreciation in there.
Yeah, if people are, there's a lot of things that people do that don't necessarily follow the advice that you are trying to give them, but you just make sure that they understand what you're trying to tell them, and if they decide to do something different, I don't think you have any liability in the end if it turns out bad for them, as long as you cover your CYA.
We together have talked about the nervous, sort of the nervous ACA client, or the people that are sort of target ACA clients, as being maybe lacking education about financial awareness type issues and just that sort of nervous nature. I'm wondering, is there a specific marketing approach that ACA members use? I would imagine after so many years you probably develop your own. But how do you identify, these people? Is there a specific approach? Do most people choose like a certain segment of people to go after, such as like dentists or doctors or something like that? How do you identify the clients that you really want to tap into? And I guess really specifically what I'm looking for, is there an ACA approach, a recommended approach to doing that?
I would say there's a number of approaches. And as part of the ACA process and that you would go through as a new member and then at the conferences, is to talk to all the other advisors and see what everybody else is doing, because there's not one right way. Everybody's personality is a little different. There's one person can pull off one kind of approach and another person can't. So you kind of, as somebody who just did it not too many years ago, you just have to kind of go around and see and as part of the training course that you get a lot of examples put in front of you. And then as you talk to other people, you'll see what they do and how they, who they hook, what kind of other, it's all kinds of things. Some people are because of where they are or the website or something, they get a lot of internet referrals. Other people have found a one key person, an attorney or a CPA or something, that just feeds them a ton of clients. Other people have networking groups and other people focus on people with handicapped children and have gotten into that market and they're well known. It's just you get to figure out what you're interested in and what works for you, and you have to try a bunch of different things, and you're going to have the tools and you have all kinds of people to give you advice on that, but ultimately you have to figure out what works for you by trying a bunch of different things.
Yeah, and I think as is common in many businesses or practices, again, your own background. So, for example, about a third of my clients are surviving spouses. I've been a surviving spouse. That's a fairly pregnant message when you go out to talk to professionals about that. That, in essence, I've walked in the shoes of a surviving spouse, and they tend to appreciate that, just on an emotional level, having someone to talk to. So it's going to depend on your own background. I should point out too, I think a lot of ACA planners are pretty mellow people, because we care so much about the tax planning as an integral part of the planning process. You tend to get a lot of our planners are sort of left brained, and actually a lot are not necessarily very comfortable with marketing, but still they find a way to make the practice grow.
And I think,
it could be the complete opposite of what the brokerage firms are looking for. The highly charismatic out there, gathering the assets,
right,
sort of thing. It's a real different mindset because of the nature. It's kind of interesting because I have both right brain and left brain characteristics. There's the marketing side that I'm comfortable with, but when you're working on the tax stuff and getting really specific with the numbers, and I personally like that variation. I like the going back and forth on that. I think that's one of the things that really keeps me interested in the work.
Right. In the August conference call, there was a general agreement, I think, that something like one new client per month is a reasonable expectation. Do you guys agree with that, or can you comment on that? So basically they were saying like 12 clients per year is kind of reasonable. I'm sure it depends on your market, you know, the area that you're in and your marketing approach and all those things. But is that a reasonable sort of expectation to have in place?
Personally, I've heard people say that. My own experience has been less than that. And also, I have a particular intake. I don't go right to the retainer with clients. I have an intake consultation that I do that a number of our planners do. It's a one-time meeting.
Okay.
That's a fixed-price meeting that we call a financial review.
Okay.
I actually do get, well, I get about, this year I'll probably be more than 35 of those for the year, which a lot of planners would say is fairly insane. It's a high volume because I really promote that. And from that, I get a certain percentage that become full retainer clients. And I also don't push that conversion very hard. I mean, there are people that could be more aggressive doing that than I feel comfortable doing. So it comes down to your sales ability too, as opposed to kind of your marketing ability, and those are two different skills.
So again,
there's variation, but I find that between my newsletter drip and the internet professional contacts, I'm at a point of pretty good volume, but my volume isn't necessarily what you're talking about. When the 12 clients that they're talking about are probably the retainer clients, and I find that's a little bit that's higher than what I've witnessed.
But I've heard that it happens. What would be your estimate then, from your experience, like 6 to 8 or somewhere in that range, or?
Well, you know, it's going to depend on a lot of variables. I certainly didn't have 12 my first year. I think I had 4. But then it was, but that's because I've also set up my practice to be kind of a co-practice with my other practice, and I wasn't out pounding the pavement. I was, kind of quietly pitching tax clients and get some referrals off the internet, and then I found that each year after tax season, all of a sudden I have this flood of people wanting to set up appointments and talk about financial planning. I guess that's the time of year for a lot of my people and a lot of my clients, I guess, start thinking about their, financial situation. So it doesn't happen, mine certainly hasn't been on an even one a month, type of thing. It's been very all of a sudden, throughout the year I'll have about 2 or 3 all of a sudden, and then I'm not out really marketing it, but on a monthly basis, I'm not attending meetings and trying to really, press the flesh. But I would say that it's going to depend a lot upon what you do, and the harder you, the more effort you put into it. Certainly, the more you got. Jenna, one of the ACA members down in the San Francisco area, said it best. You got to just get out and you have to do everything. If you try everything and something will work, but if you decide you're just going to do a couple little things, then you're not going to see that kind of. If all you're going to do is pick one group, one BNI group or something, and you're just going to go do that, then that group may not have a lot of referrals to give you. But if you try a whole bunch of different things and you really pound the pavement, it will work in the end. I went through 4 years ago. I went through the training course with a bunch of other guys, and we've kind of kept up over the years and kept in contact. And every couple of months we'll have a call and hear how many clients people have got, and it's pretty much similar to them too. They'll have a couple 1 month, and I think Chris Wenzine, he's down in Santa Cruz, and he and I have been doing it for 4 years. He went through the training together, and I think he's getting into the 20s, somewhere like that, in retainers. So, it picks up speed after the first year, because you can't expect, the first 6 months into it, no one's heard of you. You're new in business. It's got to snowball. So you have to get out there and start, get a few clients. You get, your website starts creeping up the search engine, the search engine lists, and just little things, but you got to start. And then once you get enough clients, they'll start referring people to you. You do a good job with those clients, and you know they'll refer their friends to you and stuff. So it picks up over time, but certainly it's not from day one. You're getting one new client a month on average, or anything
sure.
like that.
You know, and right one of you know I think this is fairly certain. The more fearless you are, the faster you will grow. The more fear and sort of temerity you have, it's just harder for you to get out there, and we don't expect you to be different than who you are. So that's going to be just sort of personal differences. But as with any
right.
business, a lot of it is when you're out marketing, you're kind of selling tickets to the circus. Well, you have a circus built, which is the nice thing. You don't have to really go back and build the circus because you've got the circus built. What a lot of people do is rather than really focusing themselves on all the marketing efforts, they'll still sort of like practice the planning tools for that first client. If you wait until you get the first client before you work with the tools, you'll be a lot better as far as developing your business. And as far as a little bit of history, when this is hysterical, but when you started out, before you actually went to ACA training, Bert used to require that you had like three clients. He made you go get clients before you had anything to do with them, and then he would train you. So and that's sort of the entrepreneurial nature of
right.
what it is. But this is true of any practice. My wife's a CPA, and she had to build a practice from scratch. She would say the same thing. Of course, you face the fears, but you get it done. You get out there, and you do your best for people.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, I would say maybe over the long run, one a month once you're things get up and moving. The first year is going to be slower than that, most likely. Unless some people are, there are advisors that have done better than that.
Yes.
So.
But
I would not go in expecting it.
The tough thing is everybody's practice is their own practice, and everybody has their own personality. And ACA, like Ryan said in the beginning of the call, makes it so you don't have to keep reinventing the wheel. The core thing about ACA is everybody has the same beliefs. They're all fee only. They all have the same belief on how they want to treat their clients, but everybody's business is their own business. So it's really hard when I'm on these calls and I hear, and all of you all the members actually have the same answer without, saying specifically the same answer, but the same answer is always, it depends.
It depends.
And it really just depends on you, what you want, how hard you're willing to go out there and market, given what ACA has given you and the guidelines and the resources. But ultimately, it's up to you to go out there and get your clients.
Yeah.
And that's what it comes down to.
And one last thing that we sort of challenge each other with is that if you got 20 clients your first year, the first question we'd probably think is, well, you're probably undercharging.
Right.
Right?
That's a good point.
Because pricing ourselves, what we really learn, what we are really trained to do is present this comprehensive thing with a retainer and price it appropriately. And actually understand that there's a lot of value in the word no. I don't want to take your agreement. Probably means that you have to hear some no's and people are not buying you because then you're pricing it appropriately. If everyone said yes, you're underpriced.
Mm-hmm.
So we care a lot about those sort of dynamics too.
Well, and I'm picky too. I want clients. I've had some clients that were disasters, and in hindsight, it was because I should never have let them be clients in the first place. I've had a couple of those, so I'm very picky now. You go through the full, I do several meetings with them, follow the ACA. There's kind of a preliminary presentation meeting process that you'll learn in the training, and I do it. I interview them as much as they're interviewing me to make sure it's something that will be good for both of us.
Absolutely.
Because to have a client that wastes a lot of your time or something, which has been my problem, is I've had a couple that have, when you give the full retainer, that means that you're willing to meet with them as much as needed. You can have somebody that wastes a ton of your time. So you've got to pick the client that's going to mesh with you and that you can, that you feel strongly you can do, and make money on, and they're not going to have, you get the, after you've met with, after you've gone through it a few times, you get the, you can start picking those people out.
That's a great point. And we have time for one more question, I think. Do either of you, any of you have any final questions?
I've got one. This is Scott. What, and if, or does, and if so, what does ACA do to police its own membership? In other words, how do you keep your name from getting stained out there in the marketplace?
How does ACA keep the name from getting stained?
Yes. Thank you.
How do you keep
shooting off my mouth about something that's either illegal or inappropriate?
Well, we're all pretty, we're all independent owners of our own businesses. So ACA really doesn't have, the worst you could do is kick somebody out of the group, which to my knowledge hasn't happened. But we're pretty heavily regulated. I mean, I don't know about Chip, but the state of Oregon is pretty tight here. I'm a CPA. I have all the CPA rules. I'm a CFP. We've got all the CFP rules. I'm part of NAPA. The NAPA's got its whole set of rules. So you're pretty highly regulated, and we're all, I think the group, the ACA group is pretty, just because of what we're, the service we're offering, it's a pretty interesting group of people that really have strong beliefs, I guess, and morals.
You know, we also steer away from anything that even smells of, price fixing or anything like that. You know, we do not have discussions about how we price our individual practices because that's an individual decision, and our executive director makes it very clear that we shouldn't be discussing those things because it could be misinterpreted by the by people on the outside. So we just sort of eschew that and stay away from it. Do we have a complaints or grievance thing within? Not that I'm aware of. I mean, there was something the last couple of years about one. There was a consumer complaint about one member, and the organization started having a discussion. What do we do when that happens? But if that was one complaint in 20 years, that's not too much.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, if that helps.
Okay, well, I can't thank Ryan and Chip enough for attending this call, and thank you, everybody, for attending. If you have any questions, I'm available, and I can set you up with any. We have prospect buddies that would be more than happy to talk with you. And, Greg, I can't wait to see you next week. And, Scott, you're coming, too. That'd be great. So I'll see a lot of you next week. And
see you at the conference,
thank you so much. Yes.
Okay. Thanks,
Thank
again.
You all very much. I appreciate your time as well.
Yep. Hey, Ryan, you'll be at the conference?
Thank
no,
you.
I've got a wedding next weekend.
Oh,
which
okay.
Good. I'll be. I,